Welcome to the Highbury Squad. You can follow us on Twitter at Highbury Squad. In fact, it's the same on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and eventually iTunes. Join me, Sophie, aka at Soccer Diva, Amanda, aka at GoonaGirl1969, and our very special guest, Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell. It's just like being down the pub with your mates.
Hi, everyone. And we're back, number two under the Highbury Squad pod. Unfortunately today, my partner in crime, Sophie Nicolaou, which I can't do the Greek accent like she does for all our players, unfortunately is in a work meeting and can't be with us. But joining me again is Mr. Kevin Super Campbell.
Hi, Amanda. How are you, darling?
Very, very, very hot. It is still hot down here, Kevin. I feel like I'm in Africa, honestly.
It's good.
No, I can't breathe. It's too hot. How's it where you are?
Yeah, it's warm up here, up north. I'm in Manchester. It's very warm. It's very close. And, you know, long may it continue, because we're going to have a hell of a winter, I imagine.
I know. And every time I come to Manchester, it rains. I just don't ever see any decent weather. So enjoy it. Okay.
We will.
So I'm really excited, Kevin, tonight, because we've got a guest with us.
Me too. I'm excited. He's an absolute top fella.
He is.
And I love him dearly.
And he's your mate. So I'm really excited to introduce Sky reporter, former Everton Director of Communications, Mr. Alan Myers.
Hello, Amanda. How are you? Hi, Kev.
Hi, Big Al.
I'll explain that one to you later, Amanda, by the way.
Yeah. I want to know everything, and our listeners will. And since I announced that you were coming on, and then the Highbury Squad Pod Twitter account went mad, honestly, with Evertonians, so you're obviously very well loved.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm certainly well spoken to. We have a joke up here that the favourite saying for me is it done yet? So you can imagine it's all about transfers and, but they keep me busy. They keep me up late at night and I love every minute of it, I have to be honest.
And I'm so pleased you mentioned transfers, because this is where I want to start. Now, our transfer window closes Thursday at 5 o'clock, which I have to say is the best news before the season starts. But Europe closes on the 31st of August. We can still sell to them, but we can't buy. What do you think about that? How's it going to affect Sky and everything on deadline day? I love watching that. You're going to have an effect sort of one and then one at the end of the month.
Well, no, I think obviously this Thursday is the main day, the main focus, because, you know, we're obviously still on air after Thursday. So everything that happens with regards to European transfers will still be reported, of course. But I remember actually when I went back to Everton in 13-14, I used to have chats with Roberto Martinez at the time. And one of the things that really upset him at the time was the fact that the window was open into the start of the season. Yeah. And it really, we had a couple of instances with Marouane Fellaini, Leighton Baines, you know, at the time, who Manchester United was showing a lot of interest in. And it was really, really unsettling for everybody, the players, the club, the manager, the fans. And I think it's a sensible move. I think it's slightly watered down in the fact that, as you say, you know, European clubs can still buy our players. So any top players who probably go to Europe, you know, that disruption's still going to be there to a degree. It's not going to be anywhere near like it was, but I think it's going to be there. But it's a fact of life. But I think it will be better. I think speaking to managers over the last few days, you know, you've sensed that they're pleased to just get this out the way and get on with, you know, the start of the season. Because the first few weeks, especially in the Premier League, are so, so important.
Can I just ask something? Because obviously this could affect Arsenal. Ramsey's got 1 year to go. As far as we know, he hasn't signed. If it gets to Thursday night and he hasn't signed, he could be sold by the end of August. Yet we wouldn't be able to replace him.
No, absolutely, and that's the sort of fly in the ointment of this particular transfer window, and I've already heard a couple of managers talking about that, in the fact that that's a little bit unfair. But, you know, whilst England, the Premier League and the FA, whoever it is, you know, can say, yes, this is what we're going to do, they can't tell European countries what to do.
No. And,
I mean, it'd be interesting to hear from Kevin, you know, as a player, what that disruption and that sort of attention, you know, getting your head turned, that feels like.
Well, it's quite ironic what's happening at Arsenal, especially at Arsenal. You know, I know all the Arsenal fans would want the Ramsey situation sorted out straight away. You know, Arsenal have had a long time to sort this mess out. And this is really the last remnants of sort of the Wenger era, where players have been running their contracts down. But, you know, as a player, whether you're looking forward to the season, what you actually want is, you want the window closed, because then you could really start concentrating on what you want to do as a team. Because remember, there's players, if you do sign anybody before the end, that could mean an actual teammate's out the team. So it can affect preparation. So I like the fact that it's done before the season actually starts, because for once Arsenal got their business done early, which is really unheard of. So, you know, I really like it, but as a player, when you're playing, you know, you really want the squad sorted out as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Now, this is the problem I've got with this, is that it's still going to unsettle us, Alan, because we can still sell players. So why wouldn't the whole sort of, you know, European market come in line? Do they not agree, or does their season not start till then?
No, I think they just like the way they are. And I think, if I'm being honest, there was probably a little look and think, well, if England are going to do that, well, we'll have an advantage for a month, you know, or for whatever it is. It's less than a month. But, you know, I mean, don't forget as well, the AFL can still loan players as well up until the 31st. So if Premier League clubs want to loan players out to the AFL, they can do that as well. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, in fairness to the authorities in this country, the managers asked for that, and a lot of managers wanted it. A lot of clubs wanted it. And I think they've done whatever they can do to make that happen. This might be a situation where it doesn't favour them, and they see the disadvantage, and it goes back next season or even in, you know, January or whatever it is, you know, that it's back to normal again. So, you know, we'll wait and see, but there is a danger, and as you say, Arsenal could well be affected by it.
Yeah, we could. Is there any news tonight, Alan? I saw something about Everton.
I've just broken a story now about Bernard, a Brazilian who from Shakhtar Donetsk, who's just agreed to join Everton. We have a medical tomorrow, and it's a fantastic signing for Everton. They've beaten off Chelsea, they've beaten off Atletico Madrid for him. He's a really much sought after player, and I believe tonight Everton have secured that signing, subject to a medical.
And what do you think of Everton's transfer window?
Well, it's been slow to start, and I think, you know, we've seen that, like, as Kev was saying before about Arsenal, you know, we often have a slow start to transfer windows and have a bit of a flurry in the last few days. But, you know, a manager once said to me, wait till the end of the window and then assess it then, and then you can see what you've done, whether or not you've done well or you haven't done well. And as long as you've improved your squad, and that doesn't mean about numbers or prices or anything. It just means as long as you've improved your team and your squad, then you've had a good window.
Okay. Something I want to talk to you about, I'll just go back to Everton. Sam Allardyce.
Well, yeah.
Yes, I want to ask. Okay, so let's just give you some background. I've got quite a few Copite mates, okay?
Yep.
And obviously...
Yep.
The banter
We've
between
all got our problems.
The banter between you lot is very different from the banter between us and Spurs. But I'm getting used to it over the years because, as I said, I come up a lot. I come to Arsenal, Liverpool, and I spend a lot of time with Red Scousers, as you say. And it's so interesting. They are a breed on their own. You lot are a breed on your own. And then we've got Arsenal and Spurs. So... Am I right? Because I'm not sure, because my memory is terrible. But did you not play them in the league, lose twice? And he said something like, well, I don't know what you're all moaning at, because if we was in the Champions League, we would have beaten them. Or have I got this wrong?
I can't remember that quote exactly. I think there were a few around at the time. Listen, Sam Allardyce came in and was given a job to do. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
He was, whether, you know, there's some debate as to whether that job was needed to be done. But nevertheless, Everton were down the lower end of the division. Under Ronald Koeman at that point, it didn't look like there was anything going to change. So there was real danger that people in the hierarchy of the club thought, you know, we could be in trouble here. And I think, you know, the thought of Everton, like it would be with Arsenal, going out of the Premier League is unthinkable. You know, it's just something you can't even contemplate. So, I think Arsenal and Everton are the longest, serving members of the Premier, or not the Premier League, but the top flight of English football, if I'm right. So, look, Sam Allardyce was brought in. He was told to do a job. I don't think he was ever really the future and where we were going to go on. But at the bottom line was he did the job he was asked to do. Mm. He got them up to eighth. He could put them in a decent position in the league.
Mm.
He upset a few of the fans, or quite a few of the fans on the way, with certain things he said and the way he was. But listen, that's Sam Allardyce. You know what you're going to get when you get Sam Allardyce. And the bottom line is he did what he was asked to do.
Yeah, he did the job. He kept you up, didn't he?
Well, yeah. Like I say, you know.
Oh, yeah. Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute.
I knew he'd come back.
Here we come.
Hold on.
Here comes the blue nose, as we call him.
No, I've got to tell it how it is. Look, Big Sam was only going to be a stopgap. He was never first choice. If you remember correctly, he wanted the job. He didn't get the job. And then at last knockings, when the results went a bit funny, they gave him the job. He insisted on 18 months. He stuck it at 6 months and got a payoff for another 12 months. That's not bad business. I think he banked 6 million. Thank you very much for steadying the ship. We were never going to go down, but thanks for steadying it. And that was it. You know, there was no long-term plan for Sam Allardyce. I think the Marco Silva situation, I think the club really wanted Marco Silva, obviously before he actually moved. And then we wanted him. They wouldn't sell to us. And then he got the sack. So, you know, it's just a matter of time and irony that Marco Silva's taken over now. So, you know, I don't want to hear all the sad stories about Sam Allardyce. He was only ever going to be a stopgap.
I agree. I agree totally, Kevin. And that's what I say. You know, he was brought in to do what was meant to be done. I never expected him at all to ever go on and manage this season. You know, it just wasn't something I thought would happen. But, you know, let's be fair. You know, he was asked to do what he was asked to do, and he did it, you know, and that's the bottom line. But as far as going forward, Everton, the way it's gone over the last few years from Martinez to Koeman, you know, they had to do something. They had to bring in a coach who was going to be here for a while and build and bring an ethos to the club. And you know, that's what they had to do.
Mm.
And they had to, you know, and that's what they've done now. And I think that was always the plan, as Kev says.
Can I just ask both of you, being the fact that we've got a player that's played for both of us that we both love, Mikel Arteta, do you not think he could have gone back to Everton?
Well, you go first, Kev.
Yeah, I think he could have, but, you know, one, he's got no managerial experience. I mean, it was quite a surprise when he got linked with the Arsenal job, let's be honest.
Mm.
After just really, you know, being an assistant manager under Pep Guardiola, that, fair enough, he's learnt a lot, but that doesn't qualify you to really manage these big clubs. So I don't think he was ever on the radar of Everton until he got linked with Arsenal. Because it took so long for Silva to be announced that, you know, Evertonians thought maybe, you know, Arteta's got a chance.
Mm.
And obviously, Al, you probably know quite a bit more than I do regarding that.
Well, look, I think people looked at Arteta, no two ways about it. But I think what's important to say here, personally, I don't think he would have been the right fit for Everton. I think in time to come, he's going to be a top manager. I think he's got that. You know, I've spoken to him a few times, Mikel. I've interviewed him on a number of occasions. He's a very clever guy. He's a very intelligent guy. He's a very professional guy. He's got all the attributes that you will need to become a manager one day. I think what people underestimate, and a few of them found out more recently than not, is that Everton is a huge job. It's like Arsenal in many ways.
Yeah.
It's a huge club. I mean, obviously, Arsenal have the stadium now, and they have the bigger infrastructure, and they've had the success in recent years. But Everton is still a huge club, and it's a really pressured job. And when managers get in, I remember Roberto Martinez saying to me, wow, you know, 6 weeks in, I didn't realize it was as big as this, you know, and you could see it took him aback a little bit, you know, and I think that's what happens. And I think, you know, for me, Arteta didn't have the experience. You've got to have somebody who has at the very least some Premier League experience.
As I said, you know, I've got Kopite mates and stuff, and I hear their side of the rivalry. How does it feel having them across the park? The fact that, you know, they're quite lauded in the media, aren't they?
Klopp. Listen, I grew up in a family. I had six brothers and a father who were all Liverpoolians.
Really?
Except me. I was the only Evertonian in the house. And I don't know what happened. I do know why it happened. But you know, the banter is incredible. You know, it is different. It's unique. It's not the same as, you know, we can argue till we're blue in the face and they're red in the face. But the bottom line is we'll have a smile at the end of it, which is unlike most rivalries. It is unique. And, you know, I watch it on Twitter, the banter, you know, and it's really funny. It's humorous. It has gone a little bit more intense over the last few years, I have to be honest. But no, it's good fun and it is different. I think you're right.
Yeah, my friend said that. He said it's gone a little bit nastier the last few years
because our
perception of being a Southern fan was that Everton and Liverpool fans sat together because obviously, like you said, split families the whole way along. Mm. But I don't think it's quite like that anymore,
is it?
Oh, no,
it does still happen. Yeah, it still happens. If you watch a derby game, you will see if the opposite team score, if you like, you'll see dots around the ground of people jumping up. And that's the good thing about it is that you can sit in the middle of the cop, maybe not the cop, but you can sit in the main stand at Liverpool or at Everton, and you can jump up when your team scores, even if you're the away fan, and you'll have no problem. You know, listen, if you start pushing people on the head and things like that, you know, you're in trouble. But you can still do it. And I think it is unique, in fairness, you know. I mean, it was a terrible time for me growing up in the 70s and 80s Liverpool won everything. There was a time, I remember, there was a time when I thought, they're never going to lose again.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And it was horrendous. But you get
Al, I've got a question for you.
Go on.
Where were you on that Friday night in 89?
Oh, you're such a witch, Kevin. I was just going to say to him when he went, they're never going to lose. I was going to say, they did.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you.
Can I just jump in 1 second, Alan?
Yeah,
exactly what you thought. I thought that the whole of the 80s, I said to my dad, we used to listen to Arsenal away every game on the radio. I said, what's the point in listening? We never win. Liverpool don't lose. And it's really interesting. I think the whole country felt like that. So has Kevin said, where were you?
Well, first of all, I remember you beating Liverpool very late in extra time in a cup. It was the FA Cup or the League Cup, I can't remember now, but we'd been beaten by West Ham, I think it was, and you had beaten Liverpool. Everyone thought it was going to be a Liverpool-Everton final, and it was Arsenal-West Ham, I think. So I can't remember what.
1980.
Would it be? Yeah, and I remember driving home and thinking, oh no, you know, this final we thought. But let me go to 89 because I've got a great story about that. I used to drive a Hackney cab in Liverpool, would you believe, many years ago. And that night I was out because, of course, it was absolutely no interest to me to watch any television or watch any football because it was Liverpool and Arsenal. I didn't care. Anyway, so I'm out driving. Next minute, this guy with a red scarf on flags me down. And he says, get in the cab. And he's like really panicking. Get me to the pub. Get me to this pub. And it was this pub in Halewood. So I picked him up, and I drove like a lunatic, as you do, when, you know, for passengers when they want to go somewhere fast. And I got into the pub, and there was maybe 5 minutes left of the game. He wanted to get in. He was telling me, "I want to get in to see the end. I want to get in to see us win the league." You know, this Liverpool fan. Anyway, when I pulled up in the car park, all you could hear was this banging and cheering, and you know, all the rest of it. The place was mad. And he walked through the door, and I sort of sat there for a minute, putting my change away and doing what you do, you know, as a cab driver. And the next minute, there was silence, absolute silence in the whole place. You couldn't hear a pin drop except for one thing, and that was the commentator saying Thomas. That was all I heard. And I thought, I better get out of here, you know, because I told the guy I was an Evertonian. But the silence was palpable. You know, you could literally hear a pin drop apart from this commentary on the television. And I think that was an unbelievable moment to hear how, you know, football can make that happen, if you know what I mean. You know, it was like, no matter who you support, but to hear that change in people, that, because it was chalk and cheese, it was totally different, you know, within a second. And I think that was the amazing moment of that 89 title decider, wasn't it?
Well, you were there, I was behind the goal, and Kevin was on the sidelines. We've all got... I'm just slightly ballistic, and everyone knows my story because I say it about 1,000 times. But it's so interesting because over the years, Evertonians always say to me it was one of the best nights of their life. That's like,
well,
everyone supported us, obviously, didn't they? So I get it. If Tottenham were playing Liverpool, I'd be a Scouser. Whoever Tottenham were playing, I'd be the other, you know, the other team supporter, and I would love it. But honestly, so many people have bought the 89 film because they just love seeing, you know, as you said, look, it was like a fortress.
Yeah.
I went there thinking we weren't going to win. So I'm not sure how many people did.
Well, I've always thought about that with Liverpool. I think within the week before, on Wednesday or Tuesday night, they'd beaten West Ham 5-0.
Yeah.
And I think that was the problem for them, because I think if they had to get a 0-0 draw against Arsenal, or, you know, they have to win 1-0, but they didn't. It was all about what they didn't have to lose by.
Yeah.
And I think that mentally played on them. And I think that was, you know, so instead of going in there knowing they had to still be at the top of their game, they thought, we can sit back here. And that wasn't the way to do it, you know. And it was, I mean, if you're ever going to win a title, who wouldn't want to win a title that way, you know? And to be honest with you, I'm a little bit different than most Evertonians, I think. I don't care about anyone else's results. It does. Yeah. I don't get pleasure in seeing Liverpool lose. I really don't, apart from when they play us, which is unusual, you know, very unusual. But I think it was probably because of my upbringing and the family I lived in. You know, that was the way it was. I'd usually get a slap if I laughed anyway. So that's probably what it is. But no, what a way to win a title, you know, and I know my Gooner mates never stop talking about it.
Yeah, and everyone thinks it's just me that talks about it, but there was thousands of us there that day, and I had so many funny experiences that day. But you know, and I, for me, nothing will ever, ever beat that unless we beat Tottenham in the Champions League final in the last minute. I can't.
Not even beating Tottenham at winning the title at White Hart Lane?
It's very hard.
That's been done.
Beaten Tottenham for the title. We've beaten Tottenham and won the title. So
yeah,
I think it would beat it, Kevin, wouldn't it? I mean, if both of us are going for the title, and we're at the new White Hart Lane, and it's in the last minute, and Mesut Ozil goes through, I think he's going to beat it, don't you?
Yeah, that would be sweet, but I can't see them getting there, can you?
At the moment, I can't see us getting there, to be honest. But I actually don't think, and Alan...
Little slide tackle from Kev there. Then.
Exactly. Get stuck in. Ivory squad.
Yeah, he's got his little banter with his Liverpool mates, and now he's got his banter with his Tottenham mates. But
exactly.
Yeah, no, I love the banter. I mean, my life is surrounded by Tottenham fans. Always has been, like you in the 80s, unfortunately. When I was at school, early 80s, Tottenham were doing great and we weren't. I leave school in 86 and then we start winning. You know, so I had all that, you know.
At least you could afford to go then.
Yes. I do still go, but it is tough to find the money. And, you know, I love the banter. So when I come up north, when I'm with my City friends and my United friends, their banter is very, very different. All they're obsessed with is like these empty seats. That's all they talk about is how many fans follow this lot. And Arsenal and Tottenham don't talk like that, and Liverpool and Everton don't talk like that either. But, you know, do you think the rivalries are still as passionate as they were back in the 80s? Kev, do you? Because obviously you played in a few.
Yeah, I think they are still as passionate, but I think it's a bit different because there's no standing. Because when there was standing, there was a real buzz. You know, when you were at Highbury, that North Bank, you know, at the Gladys Street was standing.
You know,
that type, it generated an atmosphere that was second to none. You know, I really want them to bring back safe standing, because then you're going to get that culture back.
Yeah.
You know, where everybody's stuck together and the songs start and the bouncing crowd starts. So I think the rivalry is still there.
Mm.
But all this all-seater stadium, sometimes against the certain games, the teams suffer. The atmosphere suffers.
100%. It has. There's no two ways about it, because it's made it a sort of sit down spectator sport, hasn't it? You know, and where it wasn't that. I mean, I remember going in the cop as a 10-year-old with a blue and white scarf on, you know, and I actually did that. You know, I mean, okay, I got a few comments, and a 10-year-old, you're going to be pretty safe, you know, but the banter was fantastic then. But, you know, it made me laugh there a moment, Amanda. You said to Kevin, you know, you've played in a few derbies. He's got his own Derby song. We can't sing it on here, but he's got his own Derby song.
I think I know it, but can't you sing it a little bit?
Well, who put the ball in the...
Yes.
Red Nose Net.
Yes.
Who put the ball in the Red Nose Net. Yeah.
And they love it. We did a sort of evening with Kevin Campbell not too long ago. And that started up that song. And it went on for about 10 minutes. They just wouldn't stop singing it. It was brilliant, you know. But Kev, I mean, you know, I remember that game. He scored after 6 minutes, would you believe? And I don't go to Anfield, even when I work for Everton. I won't go to Anfield because I just can't stand losing there, you know. And I would watch on the television, and I just couldn't believe that, you know, it was that long. We had 84 minutes to wait, you know, to get through. And it was like, oh, it was horrendous. You know, it was like torture. It was completely the opposite to you winning the title in 89, you know, but we had to endure the whole 84 minutes for it. But to score in the derby, as I'm sure, you know, the Arsenal players will know, scoring against Tottenham it doesn't get much better than that.
Can I ask, actually, Kevin, I've never asked you this. So you've played Arsenal Tottenham, you've played Liverpool Everton. I'm not going to ask you which was the bet or anything like that, but were there many differences?
Yeah, of course there are. I mean, look, there's the North London Derby is hatred. Let's have it right.
Yeah.
London Derby, there's obviously a lot riding on the game, and a lot of the fans are petrified, aren't they? You know, for the result.
I'm petrified, yeah.
You know, and it's total segregation, and you know, you just, fans have to be kept apart.
Yeah.
But the Merseyside Derby, you know, Will, Alan mentioned before that, you know, he was in the cop with a scarf. When I scored, when the ball hit the back of the net at the cop end, Evertonians were jumping in the cop. And for me, that was like, wow. That was really a wow moment, because that could never happen in London.
Well, you know. Kev, you say that, but in the 80s, when we used to play at White Hart Lane, I sat with the Tottenham, and being a girl, I sort of got away with it, but it did get nasty. I was one of the stands opposite the Arsenal lot, and I just took it for granted. I think I was a teenage, probably 15, 20, and I didn't have that fear then. But after a couple of seasons of doing it, because we got some tickets via Tottenham, I think, after a couple of seasons of doing it, we got called names and we could never do it again. So it was too dangerous to go as such. And I know it's different with the Liverpool Everton. It's not that hatred, is it? It's more like a piss take, isn't it? It's more like banter, funny banter, isn't it?
It is banter. And it's, you know, and I think what deep down in both Liverpool and Everton fans' heads somewhere is there's a line which we know we don't cross. You know, we can go. I mean, I remember the reason I don't go to Anfield anymore for Everton games is because back years ago, we played them and I can't remember when it was. It was in the '90s, I think early '90s. And, we got at that point, you know, if we got a point at Anfield, it was like winning the league at that point. You know, we were so bad and we'd drawn pretty much drawn 0-0 right through to sort of 96 minutes it was. And I was starting to get over, happy in all my celebrations of this point, as you can imagine. And I was in with the Liverpool fans. And then Ronnie Rosenthal from nowhere scored a winner for Liverpool after 97 minutes, I think it was. And the stick I got, me and my mate, and we did have to make a sharp exit, I have to be honest. And ever since then, I thought, I'm not putting myself through that ever again. And I never went back and I didn't even go back I'll go to Anfield any time when Liverpool are playing somebody else, but never when they play Everton because I just can't handle it. It's as simple as that.
I get that. You are a very strange Evertonian, I have to say.
I'm just strange. Never mind the Evertonian.
No, Amanda. Alan will tell you. There are Evertonians who will not set foot in Anfield.
No, sorry, that's not what I mean where he's strange. That I get, because I find it hard going to Tottenham. But no, what I mean is that he doesn't want Liverpool to lose. That, you know, he's not bothered by them. I've never met an Evertonian that isn't, as they call you, the bitter blue nose, whatever, and their red nose and whatever. I've never met one that is not bothered. You know, you're just not bothered by it. No, that's right, fair enough.
Don't interest me whatsoever. I'm only interested in it. Listen, I want to win 10-0 every time we play them, you know.
Of course.
But when somebody else is playing, I really don't care, you know, because it doesn't interest me. You know, it really doesn't interest me.
Okay. So, as I said, the Twitter went a bit mad with, like, Everton questions, and I do feel like I need to ask you a few because, bless them, they've come on our account. Someone that Kevin and I tweet is Marie B, MBE.
Oh, brilliant.
MBEFC85, yeah.
I know Marie B, yeah.
Oh, good. All she said, there's no question, she said, just let him know all us Blues adore him and are very grateful for his communication through Twitter. And that I think is so important. I mean, Kev's brilliant for that. He communicates with anyone that tweets him.
He does.
And I wish more old legends would do that because it gives an insight. You know, I may criticise something and Kev go, No, you're seeing this all wrong. And it's so interesting. So how do you feel with your communication on Twitter? Do you enjoy it?
I love it. I mean, first of all, from the former players, 100% agree with you. You know, more should do it because their knowledge of the game and what they've seen. And don't forget, you know, people think, oh, what's happening today is all new. And it's not, you know, listen, okay, Kev's era didn't make videos in LA, you know, about how, you know, and all this that they do now. But at the same time, the football side of it is exactly the same. The same things are happening, the same emotions. And the likes of Kevin and his teammates from that era, they all know what happens in football and they've got great knowledge to impart on everyone. So it's great to hear. And Kevin is brilliant, as you say at it. From my point of view, when I left Sky to go back to Everton, as director of communications, I've been at Sky for 12 years. I love the place, love the job, everything about it. But the only job, and I told my boss when I started 12 years earlier, the only job I would ever leave Sky for would be to go back to Everton. And, you know, and I rang him up on the day and I said, remember what I said to you when I first joined? And he said, yeah. I said, well, that job's come up and I want to take it. And he gave me all his best and off I went. And I wanted to go back into Everton because I'd done it before in the 90s, you know, and I wanted to go back and I'd not done it so well in the 90s, really, if I'm being honest. But I went back and I wanted to be different. I didn't want to be a suit who just put statement out, and I wanted to actually communicate with football fans because I think that's missing in the game today. I think it's the drift, you know, it's drifted so far away that the gap between player and fan, and I think it needs addressing. I think it is being addressed, in fairness, over the last 12 months or so. I think I can see things coming back, but I wanted to be different. I wanted to talk to fans on a face-to-face basis. You know, literally not face to face, but you know what I'm saying. You know, on many occasions I did face to face, but I wanted to go and speak to them and answer questions, because there's nothing in football that you can't talk about. There are things that you can't say, you know, which are commercially sensitive and you know, criticism and things like that you've got to respect. But at the same time, you shouldn't be able, you shouldn't have a problem talking to fans. And that's what I wanted to do. It didn't work out for me. I was there for 7 months, but that 7 months was the best time of my working life, I have to say. It was brilliant.
Big Al, would you consider going back? Because there's a lot of change going on at Goodison Park mm-hmm. right now. And I know I've often said it, you know, the club actually miss you, a person like yourself.
It's really interesting,
would you consider
Kev.
Going back?
It's really interesting, Kev, you say that, because Tiffany at Nola Arscale has just asked exactly that. Would you ever seriously consider a permanent move back to Everton?
I'd go back tomorrow. I'd crawl back, you know. But the bottom line is they have a good communications department. They have people in the job who do a very good job and work hard and are great Evertonians. So, you know, I wouldn't be disrespectful to say that, you know, in that way. But, of course, you know, like I said to you, there's only one job for me in life, and that's Everton. And I would do pretty much anything for them any time. It's you know, it's my club. It affects you in a different way. You'll be the same with Arsenal. You know, Kev has played for both Arsenal, and I know those two. You know, I know all his clubs mean things to him, but I think those two in particular have a special thing for him. You know, and it does something to you. You know, you think differently about those, the club you love, and yeah, of course I would go back tomorrow, but you know, I enjoy what I do now, you know, I'm eternally grateful to Sky for giving me that work, and I absolutely adore it. It's great.
Okay, so we've got at Jack Hellier. There's something we touched on before. He said, can you see Arteta as a potential future manager, maybe after Silva?
Yeah, I can. Like I said before, I 100% think he could be a manager. There's no two ways about it. I think he will be a manager before long. I just felt at the time that it was too early for him. You know, you've got to, you know, being as many people have found out, and there's not many who you know, go against this, but there are not many number two coaches, assistant managers rather, who've made it as managers. Not many at all. There's a few, but there's not many. And I think the realization of how the job changes when you become a number one, is incredible. And, you know, when it's down to you, you know, an assistant manager can go home at night and not have to worry.
Yeah.
A manager can't, you know, and that's the hard part of the job.
Okay, so Mark at Scouseman Blue, I wonder who he supports.
Know him, yeah.
What could the club do to improve the communication it has with the fans? And I think this affects every club, if I'm honest.
It does, yeah. And like I say, I think, and this is not about Everton, but I think there's a think it is changing, as I say. I think I can see things at clubs where it does change. But I think there's a real need for the game to reconnect with the fan, the supporter, and not just the supporters who join clubs, and you know, the real supporters who, whether they want to be a season ticket holder, whether they can afford, because some people can't afford, you know, to go every week. Some people can't afford to have a season ticket in clubs, you know. But no matter who it is, get out there, speak to people, understand what they want, listen to them. This is what people in football, you know, a lot of people in football don't do. They don't listen, and it's harder to listen than it is to talk, you know. And
yes,
you know, football for a long time has made statements to fans, has barked orders at them, has, you know, in the worst cases, you know, and it's disrespected fans in many clubs, you know. I was a director of Blackburn, and before I got there, you know, for whatever reason, that was the case there. The fans were furious about the way things, it wasn't just about results on the pitch, it was about the way they were being treated. I changed that, I think I can honestly say, because it's simple, and it's no genius about it. I just invited them in and sat down and talked and said, so tell me, tell me how you feel, tell me what you feel, and tell me, you know, I know because I've been there, you know, I'm a fan. I love football and it affects me in a certain way. And if you can just listen and take on board, that's all fans want to be. Listen to, you know, they know, listen, most fans are mad, you know, to some of the requests they ask. I mean, you know, We've been talking about a player coming to Everton. He hasn't even signed yet. He hasn't even done it. And they're asking me who's next. This is what they're like. You know, it's not.
Oh, bless them.
Stop. Yeah, if they don't stop, it's just relentless. And a lot of fans' requests and thoughts are unrealistic in the real world, if you know what I mean. But they don't know that because they're not in behind the scenes in football clubs. They don't see. But they just need to be given the respect to be listened to and to be understood. And I think Everton, in fairness, actually do that very, very well. I really do. And, you know, I'm not just saying that because it's my club. I think you only have to look at some of the things they've done in the community. And they're second to none in the community. And I think that's great work, you know. But I do think all clubs, as you said, it's not just Everton, it's a lot of clubs. They just need to listen a bit more to the fan.
I could listen to you all day, Alan. I'm sort of mesmerised by what you say. Could you want to come work at Arsenal? Because we've got terrible communications with the fans. It's got
really?
So bad. Oh, it's got so toxic over the years. It may be different now because obviously we've had a change of quite a big change. Yeah, terrible.
I think we're hoping, Amanda, aren't we? We're hoping it changes.
I feel like it's changed already though, Kev. Don't you or not?
Yeah, well, look. The communication part hasn't had to change because there's a feel-good factor now. Unai Emery's taken over and he's made the signings and, you know, it's kind of galvanised and brought the fans together. But there is going to be choppy waters ahead. We know that. And Arsenal haven't been great in their communication with the supporters, you know, in the past. So, let's hope they can do it better. But if not, that's something that seriously needs to be addressed.
I have to say, from the outside looking in, when the whole of Wenger thing occurred, you know, I did feel, especially when you see the likes of Arsenal TV and things like this, you did see a real frustration from fans who felt they were just given the same message day in, day out. Now, it's very difficult for clubs, certainly the communications department, because they can only be led by the leaders of the club. They can't make the decisions themselves. They have to have permission to do what they do. So, you know, it's unfair sometimes to criticise the departments involved because it's not necessarily their fault. But I think, you know, as I said before, I remember when I came back to Everton, I had loads of Twitter followers. You know, I think I got, within the first week or so, 35,000 followers on Twitter, just all Evertonians. That was the thing. And I remember saying to them, someone kept asking me, come for a drink with us, come down to this pub, go down to that pub, come down, because I was talking in a way that they understood and they enjoyed, you know. And so I said to them, and it was a joke, I'll have a cup of tea with you, but I don't drink, I never drink alcohol. So they started, and then one guy said, I'll come for a cup of tea with you. So I said, okay. So what I said was, okay, I'll pick 100 fans. And this is when I was at the club. I'll pick 100 fans and we'll have a tea party. There's not going to be any drink. There's only going to be tea, biscuits and cakes. And all we're going to do is talk football. We're not going to talk about money. We're not going to talk about directors. We're not going to talk about boards. We're going to talk about football. We had the kit man there. We had the under-23 manager there. We had the manager there. We had one of the catering staff who told us about her job and everything. And it was the best night. People still talk to me about it. It was the best night ever. And that's what's missing from football is that we've stopped talking about football. You know, the thing we love, the reason we go every week. We've stopped talking about that. It was a great night. People, we gave everyone a cake with my face on it. Would you believe? We've got, people have never eaten them. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but, but honestly, we had such a laugh and there was no drink involved, you know, not that that's a problem, you know, but it was just a nice night to sit. And, you know, the only thing that was banned was fig rolls because, of course, they're the devil's biscuit. But we had a great night, honestly, and people loved it. And I think that's what clubs need to do. Open your doors, bring the fans in, speak to them regularly. That's all you have to do. And I promise you, fans will be happy. You know, they'll moan. They'll always moan. But I don't see moaning as moaning. I see moaning as passion.
You know, care. They care.
They care.
Oh, yeah.
The minute football fans stop moaning, it's the end.
Oh, absolutely. If anyone ever says I'm moaning, I know, I always say the same thing. No, it's because I care. It's nothing to do with moaning. couple of things. Something I want to bring up. I'm not sure if you remember the 3rd of May 1998.
I do.
Oh, look at you.
Very, very much. Very much I do, yes. I was standing on the pitch at the end when you got your trophy.
How, I mean, obviously, there's not much rivalries there between Everton and Arsenal.
No respect, I think, over
there is. And as I said, when I was growing up in the 80s, Everton were a big club. I always wanted Everton to win because Liverpool just won everything. I always wanted the underdog, you know, to win. Yeah. But you were also a big club, you know, so.
Oh, massive. Yeah, we had some great battles against Arsenal.
Yeah.
I can remember, and I remember Pat Rice coming and playing at Goodison and all these players who, you know, I'll tell you one of the earliest memories I ever have. And you know, funny enough, I'm going to contradict myself here a little bit because all my family were watching the, was it 1970? What was the Charlie George final?
71
it was, wasn't it? Because they played in 73 Liverpool, didn't it? But, anyway, they were watching it, and I was watching it. Of course, I was banished to the front room. I couldn't be in the room, you know, in the back because where they were all watching it. So I had to sit on my own. And then what happened? They didn't know, but I had it on the telly in the other room, you know, and we were watching. And then, of course, Charlie George did the famous fall down on the floor with his arms stretched out. And I ran in the front, the back room where they were all watching it after it and just laid down in the same way. You know, I got battered, like, you know, but it was brilliant. And so it was more about the fact that they banished me, you know, but that was my earliest ever memory really of Arsenal in 71, you know, but I think I've seen some fantastic, games against Arsenal. You know, I was there. I interviewed Arsene Wenger on Sky when Wayne Rooney scored and jumped on Kev's back and Wenger was, I loved Wenger. I absolutely adored Wenger. I think he was the most nicest gentleman I've ever met in football as far as interviewing and talking to. And you could ask him any question and he wouldn't get upset about it. He'd answer it in an intellectual way. And it was sad to see what was happening in the last few years. I know that. And I think probably stayed a little bit longer than it, probably what he should have done. But at the same time, I could understand it. But I remember some of the, you know, I mean, you gave us some beatings, you know, in the Premier League, that's for sure. But that day in particular, because I've seen you pick the title up, the trophy up twice on the Highbury pitch
for some reason.
I bet. And that day when Tony Adams burst through our defence, you know, and put that past Thomas Myra, I knew it was all over. And I think the second one, was it 4-3 against us? When you won the league as well, would that be in 2002, I think, maybe? And I seem to remember you doing everything to try and get Franny Jeffers to score a goal on that game, if I remember rightly.
But you know what was ironic about that game that, you know, that Adams goes through? Is that Bold plays a beautiful ball through the midfield, yet we had Vieira Petit, Overmars, Bergkamp, and it's Adams and Bold. You know, the irony and the fact that it's the iconic for Arsenal fans where he stands on the pitch with his arms raised.
That's
and it was amazing for us because obviously we won the league that day. And, you know, and as you said, it was really interesting before what you said about the passion for football. I've always said football fans is like a cult. Wherever you go in the world, and I've just been to Spain for a week, whenever you meet football fans, it's like you just know. They get it.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter who you support. I met a Rangers fan. I met a Southampton fan. And we just chatted about football, you know. And they want to know about my club. I want to know about their club. And, you know, and to be fair, the people I met, they don't have success. So, you know, Arsenal fans moaning about FA Cups, it's not, I get it's relative for us, but I've taken it for granted. I have. And I've met Arsene Wenger and I've had a sort of interview situation and he is so lovely and he is so charismatic and he's so mesmerizing. But unfortunately, he did stay too long, you know, in my opinion. And, you know, I'm pleased that, you know, eventually, he sort of went with dignity, had a, you know,
great... I was at his final game as well. I was reporting on the Huddersfield away game as well, which was brilliant for me because it just seemed to... And he shook my hand in the tunnel as he came out, you know, because, you know, whilst he wouldn't know me, he recognised me, obviously. And it was really nice that he'd come over and he shook my hand and he got onto that bus. And I, you know, just something lovely about it. And I thought, you know, what a great servant to the game. Oh, I think Arsene Wenger was.
Yeah, really was. Absolutely. And I just would have loved him to go on a win at, you know, the whole cup final or something. And, I never wanted it to get like this.
No.
But you know what?
I'll tell you my favourite player, though. My favourite Arsenal player. I must just tell you this. Dennis Bergkamp by a million miles. He was the most unbelievable. And I'll tell you a lovely little conversation I had. We got beat 3-1 by you. And I think he scored two, maybe one or two. And I was on the bus going back with the team. And Neville Southall said to me, he said, did you see him for that third goal? And I said, no. Oh, not for the third goal. Just before the third goal, he said. He tried to do me with the eyes, he said. And it was this lovely conversation that, you know, I was so privileged to be part of when you've hear a genius in that Neville Southall was talking about another genius in Bergkamp and how they duelled on the pitch, you know, because, you know, and Kevin will know this as a striker, you know, he tried to give Neville the eyes to send him the wrong way, you know, to score. Anyway, Neville had scored. He saved that one. He said, but then 2 minutes later, he did it again and beat me, you know, and it was just a lovely conversation to be involved in. And I always felt really privileged to be able to listen to those things, because not every football fan gets to hear those sort of things. And,
no.
And you'll know the banter there. You'll know the rivalry there as a striker-goalkeeper combination, Kevin, I'm sure.
Yeah, you're trying to – it's a duel. You know, it is a duel all the time to try and beat these goalkeepers. And look, you're talking about two of the best there.
Yeah.
To ever do it, let's be honest. So, brilliant, brilliant story. Really big story.
Alan, we could just talk all night, but unfortunately we can't.
I'm loving it.
I know. You are coming back on. You're going to be like our Highbury squad reporter now.
I'm loving that.
Amanda, hold on. We got to get one more. I've got to ask Al. Can you tell Amanda the story about Gazza when you went to interview him down at the dock?
Oh, well, listen, Gazza is a whole podcast on his own.
Yeah.
And I know we're talking Arsenal here, but let's face it. Gazza is a whole, he's not just Tottenham, is he? He's a whole new other thing. But it was when he'd left Everton and he'd gone to Burnley, I think it was. And anyway, he's about to sign or whatever it was. And he was down at the Albert Dock and he said, you know, I said, can I come and do an interview? He said, yes. So I went down to the Albert Dock and we sat there. It was a beautiful sunny day and I was doing an interview for Sky. And Jimmy Five Bellies was there as well, who you'll know, Amanda,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
You'll have heard of. And part of the interview, we just sat on the side of the dock. This is on the bank of the River Mersey. And I said to him, Jimmy's been a really good help to you through your career, hasn't he? Because we were looking back on his career. And he says, aye, he's been great to me. Like, you know, and he said, and he looked round to Jim and he said, you'd do anything for me, Jim, wouldn't you? You know, and of course, Jimmy just leaning on the barrier, you know, and he said, aye, I'll do anything to you. So he says, okay, then jump in the Mersey. So I thought they're joking around here, you know. And next minute, fully clothed, Jimmy jumped right off the dock at the end of the dock into the River Mersey.
Oh my God.
And I thought, oh my God. So the cameraman goes, of course, Gazza is now on his knees crying with laughter. You know, he couldn't believe he's done it. Then next minute, almost like the docks police came around on a yacht and started trying to fish him out with a big pole. And he starts shouting, I've lost my wedding ring, you know, because he knew he was in trouble for jumping in the river.
Yeah.
And they hauled him out, you know. Anyway, later on that night, about 10 o'clock, I got a phone call off Jimmy Fan. I've been sick 3 times. I said, well, it was the Mersey you jumped in, you know. But honestly, I could tell you, I could be here all night telling you about Gazza.
Well, you are definitely coming back on. Honestly, thank you so much. But we're now going to keep you here because Kevin and I are going to do our predictions because it is the Premier League opening.
It is
weekend.
Yeah,
I'm very excited.
What a game you've got, by the way.
I know. And do you know what? Funny enough, Alan, and you don't know me, but I actually called it the night before.
Really?
I didn't call it. I didn't know it was going to happen. But I said to a couple of friends, do you know what? I'd like to have City at home. I really would. Let's get that done. They're not going to be phenomenal like they were the whole season because no one is on day one.
No.
They're going to have a lot of players at the World Cup. We're going to have Emery. It's not going to be toxic. 100%.
Sounds like you're trying to convince yourself here, Amanda, I'll be honest.
Well, as time's gone on, and obviously what I only didn't see much of the Charity Shield yesterday, I just feel that you know, we're capable of not losing. So my prediction for Sunday is 2-2. That's what I think. I'm useless at predictions, but I just don't see us losing. You know, we could scrape a win, but, you know, I'm not going to say they're going to be fearful coming, but new manager, half a new team by the looks of it, the crowd behind you for the first time in quite a few years, and 4 o'clock on a sunny afternoon, I think we've got a really good chance. And I'd rather play them now than December, Jan, when they get going. You know what I'm saying. Kev, what's your prediction?
I'm gonna go for an Arsenal win. I'm going for a home win.
I'm gonna
be positive. Emery's been positive all pre-season. I know there's maybe some issues at the back and all that, but you know what? We're Arsenal and they're coming to our patch. So I fancy us to get a win. Definitely.
What do you think, Alan? What do you think for us?
Well, I'll tell you what. The way I look at it is, you know, what I think the advantage Arsenal will have is that nobody knows yet what Unai Emery is capable of. They don't know how he, you know, of course, you know, Guardiola will know how he plays and all the rest of it, but he won't know how he plays as Arsenal manager. And so, whereas City, everybody knows how they'll play, you know, so they'll be well aware of how City will come and what they'll do. I think it'll be tough, but I'm absolutely with Kev. I think you'll sneak a little, I think it'll be 1-0 to the Arsenal.
Yeah. Well, we'll take that. But my colleague, my partner in crime, Sophie, has done her predictions, and we're going to listen to them now.
Okay.
Hello, fellow Gooners. Sorry I couldn't be on the show today. I have a tre importante meeting here in La La Land, which I'm hoping to share with you in the coming weeks. Ugh, the anticipation of a new season, the hope for glory, the excitement of it all being ahead of us. For the first time in over, I don't know, a gazillion years, we've got a new boss. And I know that we all hope that he and the lads get off to a Usain Bolt-style fast start to the season. Don't sit back too much in this game. Play fearless football. City are definitely the team to catch, let alone beat. I mean, how many points did they finish ahead of us last season? So for me, a draw here would be a happy result. Of course, I'd love to see us win. But a 2-2 is what Sostradamus Crystal Football says. Over to you, Mystic Man.
So Mystic Band and Sophie have gone for the same result. That's never happened before.
Spooky, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't know that. She just sent me that. Oh, wow, Soph. Yeah, so none of us think we're going to lose, which is great. And that's what I'd love, the, you know, for positivity on Sunday at 4 o'clock. Just a quick one, Alan, just before you go, we say goodnight. Where will you be on Thursday afternoon?
Well, I'm not sure yet. I'll definitely be around Merseyside somewhere, but I'm not actually quite sure yet. We'll find out tomorrow on that one. But hopefully I'll be, you know, I'll certainly be at one of the big clubs in the Northwest. I would think Man United, City, Everton, Liverpool. So you can imagine where my choice would be. But unfortunately, I don't get to make that choice. But I'll go anywhere. I love it. As long as I can talk football, you know, and get paid for it, everyone's a winner.
Absolutely. And you know what? The Highbury squad are the winners, because, Alan, this has just been one of the most interesting hours. And we've interviewed so many people over the last year, and I've loved it. I don't even know where that hour's gone.
And no, flown by.
It's flown, and I don't even think we've touched the surface.
Well, I do feel as though I've hogged it a little bit, you know. So
no.
Apologies to Kev on that one.
Oh, yeah, listen, Al. We're hopefully going to have you on quite a bit anyway, because all them stuff, we got that many stories to tell.
Jeez. I want a pod of stories.
I can't even begin to go there. You know, it's just so funny. The things I've seen and things we've done, and, you know, I mean, when Kevin signed, you know, permanently for the club, and what happened that night, it just, honestly, there's so many.
Well, you've said it live now that you're going to have to come back. So
I'll definitely come back.
Thank you. Fantastic. I want to thank you so much for taking an hour out of your time. I know you're busy.
I appreciate
talking football.
I hope the listeners enjoy it.
I've already had a couple of tweets asking where they can listen to, and they're Everton fans. Oh, so yeah, you're obviously loved, and I see why now. And Kevin as well. Kevin's loved by both, you know, Arsenal and Everton. And is it?
He's loved by everyone he knows.
Yeah,
believe me.
I know. And it's great. I thank you both so much, because obviously I didn't have Sophie with me tonight. So I hope you both enjoyed it.
Loved it.
It's been great.
As always,
you made it very comfortable.
The hostess with the mostest.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So you've been listening to the Highbury Squad. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You know, give us some feedback. Take a listen. We're on SoundCloud and YouTube at the moment. iTunes will be in a couple of weeks. I want to thank both my guests, who have been amazing. And as always, what do I always say? Always Arsenal!
Welcome to the Highbury Squad. You can follow us on Twitter at Highbury Squad. In fact, it's the same on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and eventually iTunes. Join me, Sophie, aka at Soccer Diva, Amanda, aka at Guna Girl 1969, and our very special guest, Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell. It's just like being down the pub with your mates.